I'm about to start a new book to go through and study, and that being the book of Zechariah. And so for a little while tonight, it's not a long lesson, but I wanted us to do an overview of the book of Zechariah. So if you want to turn to the Pew Bible, it's page 1366. I'm just going to pick up a handful of verses here and there. I've kind of done this a little differently than I typically do. I just picked 10 things. There's 10 things I want you to know about Zechariah as we begin our study into this book. And if we can just keep these 10 things in mind, I think it'll help us to understand this. It's a very fascinating book, so hopefully it'll help us to get a little deeper understanding of it. As a text, though, I'll just turn to Zechariah, the first chapter, verse 3. And thus says the Lord of hosts, return to me, says the Lord of hosts, and I will return to you, says the Lord of hosts. And that's kind of the overall theme of this message. Return to me, because the children of Judah have been taken away. And so Zechariah is writing as the children are returning back from the 70 years of captivity in Babylon. And I keep recognizing how important of an event that was, the captivity in Babylon. As we are reading in Malachi, I accidentally turned a couple pages too far, and I got into Matthew. And so it was into the genealogy of Jesus. And if you notice, the captivity of Babylon is one of the deciding benchmarks, I guess you would call it, or the bookends of how the Jews organized their genealogy. That there was 14, it says, between Abraham to David. There was 14 generations. And then those 14 generations from David till the captivity of Babylon. And so that was one of the book. It was such a historical event, and I think it has a whole lot more meaning probably than what we give credit to. I think it's very symbolic as well as being an actual event. But thus says the Lord of hosts, return to me, and I will return to you. I was hoping Aaron would be able to make it tonight, because I put it on there, that's the Jonas Brothers. I thought of almost immediately, I might not know who the Jonas Brothers are. That's some little singing group that she really likes. But they have a song that almost mimics that. It's, I can't remember now. Come back to me, baby, and I'll come back to you. It's almost the exact same phraseology as return to me, says the Lord of hosts, and I will return to you. So we're not going to talk about the Jonas Brothers, but we're going to talk about 10 things that I think we need to know about the book of Zechariah that will really help us in our understanding. But before we go further, let's go to God and pray. We'll have a look here at our Pew Bible. Got a pretty good introduction, I think. This is on page 1366. Pretty good explanation. It says, for a dozen years or more, the task of rebuilding the temple has been half completed. Zechariah is commissioned by God to encourage the people in their unfinished responsibility. Rather than exhorting them to action with strong words of rebuke, Zechariah seeks to encourage them to action by reminding them of the future importance of the temple. The temple must be built, for one day the Messiah's glory will inhabit it. But future blessing is contingent upon obedience. The people are not merely building a building, they are building the future. With that as their motivation, they can enter into the building project with wholehearted zeal, for their Messiah is coming. So Zechariah is a prophet, and so he is coming back with the people from Babylon, and it is going to be his call, his job, is to get this temple built. Folks had come back, they'd been all gung-ho, they had started rebuilding the temple, and then they started having problems. People started aggravating, people started attacking them. Had to go one where they'd have a hammer in one hand and a sword in the other hand to try to fight off all the bad guys. And it got to the point that they kind of lost steam. They kind of lost their initiative. And they just basically said, we're just going to leave it alone. And so they've gotten real lazy when it came to putting the temple back together. Number one. Here we go. Let's talk about Zechariah. There were at least 40 Zechariahs mentioned in the Bible. That does get confusing. There are Zechariahs here and there. It was a very common name, apparently, back in that time frame. I'll tell you why in a little bit. But I think one reference said 40, one said 27, one said 30-something. There's some confusion over if some of them were the same Zechariah. But the Zechariah we're introduced to is in the first chapter, first verse. It says, in the 8th month of the 2nd year, I'm going to say this, Darius. I've heard some pronounce it Darius, and I don't know. I just used to have a ball player named Darius Flowers, so that's why I call it Darius. The word of the Lord came to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo the prophet. But that's who we're introduced to, that we're given a pretty good definition. Now, part of it gets confusing is because it says he was the son of Iddo. He was Iddo's grandson. And for some reason, sometimes he is just referred to as simply as the son of Iddo. And so there's a question, is that a different fellow? Was there someone else that had the lineage of Iddo and then Zechariah and then another that had Iddo and Harry said it's Berechiah and then Zechariah? And so there is some question about that. But the prophet Zechariah is also known as the son of Iddo. I'll give you two ideas why that could possibly be. One, Iddo is just more well known. Iddo was one of the priests. He was one of the big time heads of families, of the priestly family that returned for Babylon. And so it's mentioned, I believe it's in Ezra that has it broken into the groups. Iddo was one of the main priests. And it was through his family lineage that Zechariah came. One commentator said, possibly Iddo raised Zechariah. Maybe something happened to the dad, and maybe he died, and Iddo had to take over the raising. I don't know. I also know sometimes in the Bible it talks about a person being the son of David, and they may be a grandson or a great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson, whatever it is, but they're still referred to as the son of David. Can't give you a good answer to that, but I think it's all... When you hear about the son of Iddo, I still think that's the same Zechariah. So try not to get confused when you're reading. Sometimes you may see a different name of Zechariah. We'll talk about this later. There's even a reference in the New Testament. Jesus talks about a man by the name of Zechariah being killed. It said from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah. And some people think it's this Zechariah. Some people think that it's a different Zechariah. So we'll talk about that in a little more depth when we get to that in our study. But there's not just one Zechariah. There's, according to one guy, at least 40. There's a bunch of references, so I found several. Number two, Zechariah was a contemporary of Haggai the prophet. In Ezra, the 5th chapter, verse 1, says, then the prophet Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophets, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel who was over them. So Haggai, when you read the prophecy of Haggai, talking about the same thing. It was likely that Haggai's prophecy occurred first, and then Zechariah was literally a couple months after that when he started to do his prophecies. And so Haggai's the one always like, he really gets after the people. He's like, why are we leaving the Lord's house so torn up? How long are you going to live in your ceiling homes with your nice, you know, timber roofs, and the house of the Lord is left in ruins? And so Haggai's pretty forceful about it. Zechariah's not quite as go-get-em. He's more trying to encourage them because of the coming Messiah. And so he's going to really talk about the Messiah, and he does it in a very fascinating way. But Zechariah was a contemporary of Haggai. He was also a contemporary of Ezra. He was also a contemporary of Nehemiah. He was probably also around during the time, the events of Queen Esther. And so he lived during a lot of biblical times. Now, most likely, Haggai was an old man at the time of his visions. And Zechariah, on the other hand, was very likely a young man when he had his visions. And so while their careers overlapped, Zechariah continued to prophesy for much longer than what Haggai did, because Haggai was old. So I've tried to put this into perspective. I've thought about this a lot. 70 years of captivity. So we went back 70 years. That'd be 1953. And I want to imagine, if you can, an army coming in and flat out leveling San Angelo, destroying it, and taking everybody that was left, taking them away, hundreds of miles away, and holding them there for 70 years. And I'll be honest, nobody really wanted Jerusalem anyway. It's not like the Babylonians really wanted Jerusalem. It was a military strategic point. They didn't have any use for it. The problem with Jerusalem is Jerusalem sat in the middle And to the south of Jerusalem was Egypt. And there was always fights with Egypt. And so Jerusalem was right here. And then north of Egypt, that's where all the Medes and the Persians and the Babylonians and the Assyrians, that's where all the old empires were. And so they were always fighting with Egypt, and they'd get right there in the middle, and Jerusalem was always in the way. So they didn't want Jerusalem. They didn't want Judah. It had no power or anything. So once the Babylonians came in and destroyed it, they pretty much left it alone. They didn't try to fix it. They didn't try to rebuild it. They didn't care. They had their minds set on other countries. It's kind of like I've been watching some of this stuff about the Ukrainian war. You know, the Russians came in and took a bunch of areas of Ukraine. And now in recent months, the Ukrainians have actually regained some of those territories and those cities up in the Donetsk region is what it's called. And then they showed pictures of it, and I'm thinking, I don't know if that's good or not. Because there's nothing left to the city. The cities have been totally leveled. There's not hardly a building standing. And now they're going to have to rebuild it all. But, whatever reason, Jerusalem was left level. And so now, they're trying to build it back up. And so now the people have begun to return, and they've started trying to rebuild the walls. They've started trying to shovel things up. And going back to my deal, could you imagine 1953, everybody's carried away. 70 years later, in the year 2023, we all returned to San Angelo. A lot of this building, most of us weren't born. There were a handful that might remember being a child. They might remember what it looked like in 1953. Most people wouldn't. And that's kind of how it was. The people, they really didn't have an attachment to Jerusalem other than the stories that they had heard from the old timers. And in the 70 years of captivity, all those old timers had passed on. And so there wasn't a real strong connection with the city. And so they got back and started doing this building of the walls. Yes, everything was great. And then it got hard. And they were very quick to just quit. And now Zechariah, along with Haggai, along with Nehemiah, along with Ezra, it is their job to light a fire under these people and get Jerusalem rebuilt and get this temple rebuilt like it was supposed to be. Number three, this is interesting. Did you notice Zechariah's time frame was Persian? And that's kind of an obscure thing, but if you think about it, it really says a lot. We already read this verse. In the eighth year of the second year of Darius, see, that's a Persian king. I think that's the only time I've ever seen that in the Bible. The rest of the time, it's more like Isaiah. Isaiah, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Nathan, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. See, it was normally put in, the time frame was put in the kings of Judah, not Zechariah. He was put in the time frame of Darius, a Persian king, because there were no more kings of Judah. When Zechariah prophesied, they were all gone. Judah was gone as a country. They no longer existed. The kings were gone. And so now everything is basically starting from scratch when Zechariah gets to Jerusalem. Now there's number four. Number four, Zechariah received his vision in about the year 520 B.C. And you can tell pretty closely because you can go back in history and match up the records with those of the Babylonians. They kept pretty good records. 520 B.C. is actually kind of important because 2 years before, there had been a Babylonian revolt against Persia. And so the Persians had spent a lot of time fighting. The Babylonians had finally quelled those rebellions. And in 519, 1 year later, the Egyptians revolted and rebelled against Persia. And once again, it's the fight of Egypt and Babylon. And guess who's caught right square in the middle of it? It's going to help make a little bit more sense if we understand that in the world situation, this prophecy is written in between major shifts in world power. And we're about to add another country too, and that's the country of Greece. And so Zechariah is actually going to call Greece by name when he comes to that point later in the book. Number five, Zechariah witnessed the rebuilt temple. There's a fellow by the name of Zerubbabel. And that has got to be one of the most important characters in the Old Testament that nobody ever talks about is Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was the man that was sent back first that started rebuilding the temple. In fact, a lot of times you'll even hear it called Zerubbabel's temple. So we had Solomon's temple first. The Babylonians destroyed it. They came back and rebuilt a second temple, and oftentimes it's called Zerubbabel's temple. And then later on in the time of Jesus, it was modified and it was remodeled, and that's known as Herod's temple. So Zechariah actually witnessed this rebuilt temple. It tells us in Ezra 6 and 14, so the elders of the Jews built, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they built and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the commandment of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. So it was during this time, so we've talked about Darius, this Artaxerxes, that's the king that most people think relates to the king that had problems with Esther and Mordecai and Haman. That was the king, this Artaxerxes, king of Persia. So Zechariah really covers a large part of Old Testament history. Kind of interesting. But Zechariah witnessed this rebuilt temple. I found a cool picture. I thought that one on top was pretty neat. Think about the building project of how long it would take you to build a temple like that without power tools or anything. I'm thinking it took St. Angelo, 15 years to redo Bell Street? And I'm thinking, how do these folks build a temple like this? They didn't really have slave labor. They were the slave labor. And then you had people attacking them and fighting them. It was quite an undertaking. No wonder the people got tired of dealing with it. And it took them several years. Then I found this little slide here. You had Solomon's temple, and then we had Zerubbabel. That's Zerubbabel. That's that guy. He was the one that was in charge of it. And he's the one that got that temple built. And it says it started to build at 538 B.C., and it was dedicated at 520 B.C. So it took, according to this chart, about 18 years to build that temple. And then later, this temple would be remodeled again in the time of Jesus, known as Herod's temple. So, the idea of rebuilding the temple is paramount to understanding the book of Zechariah. Because that was the important thing, to get the temple rebuilt, to get the city of Jerusalem rebuilt, and this remnant was going to return. And there was something special that was going to happen about that temple. And so now it goes into messianic prophecies. It's pretty interesting. Number 6. Revelation borrowed much from Zechariah. Some people call this book the Apocalypse of the Old Testament. Pretty interesting phrase. According to the Greek New Testament book, there are 31 direct quotations from the book of Zechariah found in Revelation. That's a bunch. It's going to talk about four horses, four winds, four horns, seven eyes, two olive trees, a golden lampstand. All these things we read about the book of Revelation are actually allusions back to the book of Zechariah. Sometimes they are very, very similar. Sometimes it's just important what the difference is as what the similarities are. And so we'll talk about some of this, and I'll tie a lot of this together with Revelation. The first one, which is the most obvious, is the four horses. And so we talk in Revelation about the four horsemen of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, what they're commonly referred to as. That's Zechariah. I saw by night, and behold, a man riding on a red horse, and it stood among the myrtle trees in the hollow, and behind him were horses, red, sorrel, and white. And so that's how Zechariah begins. He has 8 visions that he's going to talk about. The first one is the vision of these four horsemen. And the colors are a little bit different. They're a little bit out of order. In Zechariah, where we have red, and then another red, and then sorrel, or spotted, and then white. Revelation has a white horse, a red horse, a black horse, and a pale horse. Then we'll talk about later on about the differences of the colors and whatnot. But that is a direct allusion to the book of Zechariah. And so anyone who had knowledge of this book, when they heard the revelation, they would go, oh yeah, it's Zechariah. Because that was like the first vision that Zechariah put forth. So Revelation borrowed much from Zechariah. Number 7, we need Paul here for this one. The book of Zechariah is second only to Isaiah when it comes to messianic prophecies. And Isaiah is a great big old book. What is it, 66 chapters, I think? Zechariah is a little short book, 14. So word for word, page for page, pound for pound, Zechariah has more messianic prophecies than even Isaiah just condensed in a smaller book. One of the famous, you probably recognize this one, 12 and 10. And I will pour on the house of David, on the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of grace and supplication. Then they will look on me whom they pierced. Yes, they will mourn for him as one mourns for his only son, and grieve for him as one grieves for a firstborn. And it doesn't take very long to start picking up some messianic prophecies about the firstborn, the one that's being pierced, and the spirit being poured out. And you start going, oh, that's talking about Jesus. That's talking about the Christ. And so there's more of that. This is where the branch, the concept of the branch, comes from. So, number seven, Zechariah is second only to Isaiah when it comes to messianic prophecies. Number eight, Zechariah foretold the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, according to the book of John. So that's kind of interesting. Zechariah 9:9, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, a foal of a donkey. So if you remember the account, John rehashes it when Jesus was ready to enter Jerusalem into the last, wasn't the last Sunday of his life, or the next, the last Sunday of his life. Nowadays people call it Palm Sunday. And they went down and laid palms in front of him, and he rode into town on a donkey. And so John says that Jesus, when he had found a young donkey, sat on it as it is written. So he's going to now, he directly quotes Zechariah, fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt. So John said, this passage in Zechariah foretold, without a shadow of a doubt, Zechariah foretold the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So, filled with messianic prophecies in this short little book. Number nine, pay attention to the names. Names really help set the scene. So I went back to that first verse again, in the eighth month of the second year of Darius, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet. And those three names, look at what they mean. Iddo literally translates at the appointed time. That's grandpa. Dad, Berechiah, I guess I'm not exactly sure. God blesses. And Zechariah, God remembers. And so if you want to put a main idea or a main thought on the book of Zechariah, it is God remembers. God is going to remember the people that did his people wrong. God is going to remember the people that did things right. God is going to remember those that come back to him. God is going to remember his people. He's not going to let the people know. He's going to remember those that are faithful. That's what the name Zechariah means. At the appointed time, God blesses and God remembers. That's the actual definitions of those, the lineage is the name of those three. So I said earlier, a lot of people named Zechariah. That's probably one. God remembers. That's what it translates as. So I can see why people use that as a name. Well, that's number nine. And number ten, the first six chapters come from one night of visions. So that's kind of hard to believe. All this stuff that Zechariah is going to see, he has eight visions that he is going to go through. They all came on the same night. In fact, he even tells us it's on the 24th day of the 11th month. So that's not November 24th, but that would be the 11th month of the Jewish calendar. I'll just say November 24th. In the second year of Darius, the word of the Lord came to Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo the prophet. And he's going to have eight wild visions, starting with those four horsemen going through the valley. I mean, it's a real interesting little book. But when you think about all that happened in one night, well, that meant enough to drive me crazy. And now he remembered all of it and had to put it down into words. That's your first six chapters. The last couple of chapters kind of change gears. And so it's not so much a vision as it is just some different oracles and prophecies. Some people, in fact, have debated, well, I bet Zechariah wrote the first six chapters, and chapters 7 through 14 probably somebody else wrote, and they just called it under the name of Zechariah. I don't know that I would go that far. I think it just goes over several years. I think Zechariah kind of grew up, and he had the visions, and then he had some foretelling of future events as well. But some people think that it's actually two different authors combined. So, there's 10 things I want you to know about Zechariah. Number one, he's not the only Zechariah. There's a bunch of them, so we've got to make sure we're talking about the right Zechariah in the Bible. He's a contemporary of Haggai, as well as Ezra, as well as Nehemiah. His time frame was Persian, because there were no more kings of Judah. His vision occurred in the year 520 B.C., and that'll be important as we begin to tie historical events together. Number five, Zechariah witnessed the rebuilt temple, which is usually referred to as Zerubbabel's temple. Number six, the book of Revelation, very, very closely tied with the book of Zechariah. Number seven, Zechariah is second only to Isaiah when it comes to messianic prophecies. Number eight, Zechariah specifically foretold the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. Number nine, the names are very important. The name Zechariah means God remembers. And number 10, the first six chapters that we study, it's going to take a while to get through it, occurred in one night, one vision, for probably, I'm going to guess, an 18-year-old kid, something like that. That's probably about how old Zechariah was when he had this tremendous vision. So get ready. It's often called the Revelation of the Old Testament, or the Apocalypse of the Old Testament. It's a book of visions, especially the first six chapters. It's going to be wild. Filled with messianic prophecy, filled with images of the temple and the importance of the temple that had just been rebuilt and just been dedicated. And it's just a fascinating book as we go through the book of Zechariah. So hopefully this served as somewhat of an introduction to our study. And hopefully over the next couple of months, we can make our way through it and come up with some better understanding that will help us understand more of what the New Testament is talking about as well. So that's our talk for this evening, the book of Zechariah. We never like to close out having a song of invitation. If we can assist in any way, the church stands ready at this time.